Welcome to the Sunbury Press Book Show on the BookSpeak Network. Sunbury Press publishes print, electronic, and audiobooks under a variety of imprints and categories, available worldwide wherever books are sold. And now your host, the founder and CEO of Sunbury Press, Lawrence Knorr.
We're at the Christian Baker Farm near historic Boiling Springs, Pennsylvania. My guest today is professor and author Daniel Van Tassel. He's the author of Beyond Barren. With captivating humor and telling detail, Beyond Barren, a sequel to Back to Barren, narrates author Van Tassel and his wife's life together. The memoir focuses on schools and universities attended, taught at, and visited, homes purchased, built, and redecorated, vehicles and pets acquired, and travels and recreation that served as accompaniments to their academic careers and family life. Daniel Van Tassel graduated from St. Olaf College, earned graduate degrees from the University of Iowa, and taught literature at Muskingum College and Cal State San Marcos. Now living in Northfield, Minnesota, he teaches courses for senior citizens and takes the trails daily riding his mountain bike. Welcome, Daniel.
Well, welcome, Lawrence. Thank you.
Yes. So I love books, memoirs about life, especially academic life, because it's a life that I would have loved to have lived, but I lived a business life, and I'm getting a PhD late in life and will never have that long career in academia. But it all sounds so interesting and intellectual.
We'll I was going to say, we'll take you there vicariously.
Anyway. There you go. There you go. So tell us, it obviously, Back to Barren was the first book, Beyond Barren. Let's talk about why you went back to Barren. What was Barren to begin with?
Barren, Wisconsin, 80 miles northeast of Minneapolis, was my hometown. That is, from kindergarten through sophomore year in high school, I and my dad, who was a preacher, and my brother and three sisters lived the hometown experience, a small town, rural area. And you know, I enjoyed it so much I wanted to share it, and so I did in the book, as you mentioned, that came out in 2008, and then a slightly expanded version, the next year. And then one of my sisters and I made tours through towns in Minnesota, or principally Wisconsin, touting the book.
I see. So what would you say were some of the characteristics of Barren? Like, what era are we talking, the 50s, the 60s?
As you probably remember, too, there was going to the dealerships downtown in the fall in October to see the brand new 55 Chevy or whatever changed. You know, they didn't all look alike as they sort of do now. That was fun. It was a small town, mom and pop stores all over the place. And it was swimming in the river, you know, all of those captivating periods of recreation and the like. So I was fond of that place and visited from time to time at reunions and the like. But mainly, you know, back to Barren, that's an interesting concept because, you know, you really can't go home again. And yet you can reflect on where you've been and share those reflections with others.
Yeah, I find it interesting that there was a time when kids played outdoors.
And yes.
There was a time when there was a small town. And I work at a volunteer at a local museum, and you know, there's a room full of pictures. And one of the things that fascinates me, you just mentioned about the 55 Chevy in the window. Well, you go down through old Mechanicsburg here near where I live.
Oh, yeah.
There were car dealers downtown that had a very small showroom that could probably fit. Where were the new cars parked, or did you order it, or what? I don't know what the deal was. Maybe you don't know, and maybe that's not
part. Well, yeah, they kept them pretty cloaked, you know, until the removal of the shroud, and then everybody, well, pour into these small showrooms, but there would be one or two crammed in there, and that would be it, all right. I was going to say that the whole business of sales downtown, instead of like nowadays, there's big malls, you know, where there's one dealership after the next.
Right.
So you kind of visit all the rivals. But they were quite separate then. Yep.
Yeah. And now you can order your car online, or you can sell it online and know exactly what you're going to get, and there's no negotiation. It's not like you go like haggle with, you know, junior samples. You know, he kicks the tire and tells you, oh, it's working.
Yeah, right.
She runs good. So what do you think is most nostalgic about small towns in your mind? What do you miss the most?
Well, I think it's the non-mall. I mean, the malls came in and kind of wrecked business downtown for a lot of places, even like in event of whether or not to have parking meters. You know, that was a real controversy for dealers and so forth, because they wanted to have, you know, people coming to their place. But our town was, there were farms right up to the signs calling out Barron at 2,500 citizens or whatever back then. And so I mean, even though I was, well, I wasn't a city boy, I was a town boy, but we spent time in silos, barns, milking cows and helping on threshing and learning to drive tractors, as if we were agricultural students in high school instead of shop keepers.
Well, okay. So while you're talking, I've seen a few episodes of the Andy Griffith Show. Are we talking Barron equals Mayberry here, or is there, are there any similarities or differences?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's kind of a signal small town that still flourishes, but it's obviously a lot different after cell phones and walls and, you know, not the local theater where when I was a kid, it was like 12 cents to go to a double feature.
Yeah, but that was a silver dime.
Yeah, that's true. And I had both my brother and I collected coins.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes we did raid our coin collection. It was really unfortunate. But
hopefully you didn't sell any of the seeded dimes or barber dimes for a
month. Oh, I know. Well, even copperhead pennies and other victory nickels and so on, they all went to good cause.
Well, Daniel, we're going to need to take our first break.
Sure. We're
talking to Dan Van Tassel. We'll be right back.
Sunbury Press Books brings you the work of independent, diverse authors. Hearth and Home Press brings you When I Listen to a Farmer by Pete Curran, a book of photos and stories from American farmers. Also check out Fly Fishing for Trout and Bass, a beginner's quick guide by Charles F. Johnson, and At Home, 92 home-based activities to keep adults and children busy, sane, and centered by Prudence Ingerman. Find these and other intriguing works at sunburypress.com.
I'm back with author Daniel Van Tassel. He's the author of Beyond Barron. Daniel, we've been reminiscing about small-town life, and it all just sounds so wonderful. But let's talk about Beyond Barron. So as I mentioned in the intro, this is about your moving away and an academic career with your wife. Where all did you go? You know, kind of take us through some of your moves, big moves, and your important work.
Well, yeah, the title, Beyond Barron, is alluring because what was beyond Barron in terms of time and experiences, both are books about the same length, 150 pages, with illustrations to vintage black and white photos and so on. And of course, the title of the cover, which Sunbury put together, is wonderful because it shows Barron, circa 1950s, and all those cars we're talking about. And in the backdrop, the looming imminence of Mount Rainier. And of course, that would shock somebody from Barron to see that instead of tall oak trees or what have you. Anyway, in back to Barron, I had only a decade to deal with as I was growing up, but in Beyond Barron, we've got some 70 years to cover, and we moved a lot. Well, I suppose we didn't all that much. We were at a couple of schools before we really got situated at Muskingum College in New Concord, Ohio, of which John Glenn was a famous alumnus. He said, if you graduate from Muskingum, you can go anywhere in the world and beyond.
There you go.
Yeah. But then from there, after 20-some years there, where I served as dean and professor of English, my wife was a professor of art history and humanities. We moved to California around the turn of the century, and I taught at Cal State San Marcos, and she taught at Palomar College. And we both also had other jobs to kind of build up our retirement funds. I worked at a millwork department at Home Depot, and she worked at a clothing store, just to salt away a little bit more. But we were up at the Pacific Northwest for over a decade at Pacific Lutheran University. And, of course, that's where we've got Mount Rainier
right
front and center on the title page.
Well, I'm just curious about, now you mentioned how you had side jobs, too, while you were professors. So were you tenured, or were you adjunct, or?
I was tenured at PLU, and I'd published and so forth, and gone through the ranks to full professor there. So, but when I moved to when we moved to Ohio, southeastern Ohio, I did not get granted tenure.
Okay,
but you know, it's just a risk you take, I guess, and so I never looked back anyway. So it was all right. But we also included in our travels, as you know, Europe, Hong Kong, all kinds of places. Mm-hmm. And that those some of those journeys are featured in that book that Sunbury Press published, Journey by the Book, about it, not even 2 years ago.
Yes. Yes, another wonderful book by Daniel. So, just thinking about the academic life, how many students do you think you both interacted with?
Wow, over the 50-some years that I taught as a grad student and up throughout, and then, of course, teaching seniors now. Oh, that's a really good question. I mean, I didn't do huge lectures. I was usually at, I did pretty good-sized lectures at a California state institution, but all these private colleges pride themselves, you know, on...
small class.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm still in touch with some of these folks, and especially in intimate situations where I would take a group, a couple of fans from Pacific Lutheran down the coast to Oregon to the Shakespeare Festival in summer for a week, and we stay in the dorms and talk Shakespeare left and right, and see plays mounted on the Globe Theater reproduction, and then inside air-conditioned theater in the afternoon. Anyway, it got to be that the common talk was, you know, well, what do you think of this and that and Shakespeare? And, you know, we'd go to restaurants together, and we got pretty informal. So I don't know about the number, lots of them, but
yeah,
a lot of good relationships, especially on those travel trips I took to the British Isles. I did a course I called Literary Haunts of the British Isles during January before 1 year I taught in London. But in those interims, we'd go all over the place in buses and see different landmarks associated with some of the works we were reading and go to theater and so on. So there was a lot of back and forth with students. Yep.
Yeah, very interesting. And as far as teaching literature for all those years, did that change much over the years? Or did you stick with the classics? Or did you find as you moved through your career there was a demand for maybe breaking that canon?
Ah, that's a good question. I think it was fun to produce some or discussions over really contemporary poems, because my view of art is that it's you don't need or shouldn't seek a consensus. It's much broader than any individual viewer or participant, and so I would like to include in courses a wide gamut of literature. But I did standard courses a lot. Yep. especially surveys, mm-hmm. and tried to make it. Well, sometimes I would even teach a course. I would call it Poetry 101, you know, for those who never really caught on to poetry, but wish they could, and including those that maybe memorized poems or wrote them themselves. But I think it's a wide audience that you're appealing to in the classroom or beyond. When you talk about literature.
Yeah, and think about the distracted culture we live in now.
Oh, well, man.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's probably better for you to be teaching senior citizens as you are now in retirement. Could you imagine yelling at the kids in class to put their damn phones down?
Oh, yeah. You know, that was kind of unusual. It was like, did you go to the bathroom, raise your hand? No, but it does seem like... for a while there, it seemed like, especially in California, maybe the timing rather than, you know, place determined that. But in the back rows up there, you know, tending to emails and this and that.
Right.
But what you hoped is that you wouldn't have to just prohibit having the phone in the classroom, but that you would be interesting enough so that people would pay attention to you. So that was a real challenge, but that's something that... you know, tested your salt out there on the sea.
Real quick before we break, did any of the seniors in your classes now have their phones out?
No.
Good. Well, that's great.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. Let's take a quick break, Dan. We'll be right back.
Sunbury Press Books is the home of independent and diverse authors. Check out the Agency Books imprint for detective stories, tales of law enforcement, espionage, terrorism, spy thrillers, and more. Among the works available, KGB Banker by William Burton McCormick, The Apologist, a Luke Lundy novel by A.A. Weiss, and Douglas Brody's Sand or Once Upon a Time in the Jazz Age. Find these and other fascinating books at sunburypress.com.
I'm back with professor and author Daniel Van Tassel, the author of Beyond Barren. And we're talking about students and teaching. And one of the things, you know, getting back to the classics, though, I'm amazed with how much our current culture is derivative of Shakespeare. A lot of the stories, a lot of the narratives, the ideas, you can find a root in some Shakespeare origin, maybe not deliberate, maybe it's unknown, but there are a lot of connections to the past. So I do think it's, personally, I think it's interesting to learn the roots of some of these ideas. Do you still see that, or you think maybe we should just...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, even if we leapfrog back to Chaucer, the Canterbury Tales and so forth, that has a lot of... preparation for other journey tales and so forth, and just the give and take among these pilgrims who somehow, how could they hear one another in, usually not in prose, but in poetry over one horse hump or another. But anyway, I think Shakespeare, many of the classics really do speak to and underpin modern things, and that's what is fun when people realize that these are not just sort of antiques that you put in a closet or something. They're readable and applicable today. They're just apropos. But Shakespeare, I did besides these books for popular audience, I did a lot of book reviews and modern fiction studies and learned articles about Shakespeare and the whole idea of preparation for death. Like you get to Hamlet and the characters as they leave the stage in their death and so forth, you ask your question, how well prepared are they for whatever it is that nobody knows will follow death, you know? But a lot of those themes are still there, and they're pregnant, they're applicable. And so I think it's very good to mix the classics with, you know, more unconventional pieces of literature.
The technology has changed, but human nature really hasn't.
That's well said. You bet.
Boy, that sounds deep. We ought to put that down as a quote. So said Norm. I'm sure I'm paraphrasing somebody else.
Doubtless, yeah.
So in our final minutes, Dan, just a little bit on... you know, this long career as a professor, you and your wife, going to these institutions, without offending anybody, do you have a favorite institution that you taught at?
Yeah. I think probably PLU, Pacific Lutheran. Otherwise, maybe we enjoyed all of our stays, whatever they were. But the first spot when I had an MA, I taught, had an instructorship at Concordia College in Moorhead, Minnesota. And, of course, we were there for 2 years, and then, like the Anglo-Saxons, we got tired of winters, and we moved to California, and I taught at Chapman for a year before we both went back for further graduate work at the University of Iowa. But even then, those core courses I taught at U of I were always really kind of top, because I was both, like you, writing a dissertation and, you know, working on the side. And I also had physical jobs like painting, carpentry, all that kind of thing in the millwork department. But I think the 2 years we had at Concordia and the year at Chapman were neat, because in between those two times, we went out for our grand tour in Europe.
Yeah, that sounds brilliant. And in the opening, you talk a lot about cars. Is there a vehicle that you put the most miles on, one that you love the most?
It wasn't the most miles, but it was the most fun. A 49 International pickup I used as a commuter at PLU. But I think probably at one point we bought a Chevy Sprint, and both our son and daughter learned to drive on the thing and abused it.
I don't even know what a Chevy Sprint looks like, but I will Google it.
Yeah, you should. Mm-hmm. My daughter would take it up to the school yard off after school and put some cones out there and practice so she could learn to park and whatnot. And I would ride shotgun and put up with it all. But he became a great mechanic and driver in the process, as well as a student.
Yeah. Now, a 49 International pickup truck, a literature professor was driving that to college?
Yeah, in fact, sometimes we'd have candidates for openings stay at our house, as well as guest artists and so forth. We like to put them up personally, and then we would drive in the morning in this this rattle trap. Pickup to school.
It wasn't painted with flowers or anything, was it?
Well, there was some information on there about it's being number 57 of some sort of a fleet of construction vehicles at one point. It was still on there for the fun of it.
Well, that sounds fascinating. Last question for you about pets. We all have our pets. Was there a pet that stood out?
Oh, wow. Sabrina, our firstborn, was a Siamese cat we got as a wedding gift, and she went camping with us and so forth, had a leash on her, and one time my wife is standing at the bank, and the Siamese cat jumped on the shoulder of the guy in front of her. He turned around. We thought he would shout some obscenities or something. He said, "No problem, ma'am. I've got four young kids at home." But Mesa, whom we named after Mesa Verde, the Four Corners, where we found him in a culvert, you know, abandoned, he was a friend for 14 years before being hit by a car, and we had a terrible time putting him down, just losing him, you know. But there were all kinds of other pets along the way that each with his own antics, like even an erstwhile little goat we called Audrey. But the trouble was Nat was only about three or four at the time, and Audrey would butt into him and knock him on the ground. But finally we sold her, or gave her rather, to a neighbor who had a goat dairy. And so she had a new career.
Wow. Well, Daniel.
And then we also feed a lot of strays that come to our door. One of them we called Guy, after Guy Noir, the private detective, mm-hmm. of Garrison Keillor. And we feed all the birds and squirrels all the time. So we're related.
Well, I just want to recommend Beyond Barren, anybody looking for sort of the way of life of academics from the late 20th century into this century. A fascinating ride, Daniel, you and your family, and all the places you've been and all the things you've done. As we go here, what are you working on now? Is there anything that you're planning or any events?
Yes, I've got a launch event coming up on, I think, the 20th of April at what we call 50 North, the senior center about a mile away. And that'll be fun because there'll be some of the persons that I teach classes for as well, colleagues. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. Maybe even a trip to Barron this summer, back to some of the bookstores and libraries to give them the Beyond Barron on top of the Back to Barron.
Daniel, it's been great talking to you.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to the Sunbury Press Book Show on the BookSpeak Network. Check out our website at www.sunburypress.com for our latest releases. Be sure to subscribe to our newsletter to receive special offers and discounts.